As we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager, your two hosts along this journey are myself, Garrett Wong, and my co-host, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Wow, that was very dramatic. Wow.
And I wanted a really dramatic one.
It was dramatic and it was kind of quiet, and it was quiet enough that you may have heard my stomach growling over. So I hope that's a bonus feature for all of you who want to hear my stomach growling. I think I heard it. So don't do the quiet intros anymore, because I may have things happening that we want to cover up with loud intros. And welcome to the Delta Flyers stomach digestion. We're here at the season two finale of Voyager. Basics part one is our episode this week. And I can't believe we've gotten through so many episodes already. So much that I have remembered and rewatched, and some of these episodes I've watched for the first time. I don't think I've seen a lot of them, and so this has already been so much fun.
I just want to bring note to a tweet that I tweeted. I said, yes. I'm sitting in the living room watching Megan Elise edit the next episode of the Delta Flyers, and I hear Keely upstairs playing Roblox online with her friends and singing, "My anaconda don't want none unless you've got buns, hun." So she's singing Baby Got Back lyrics.
Wow. Right?
And then I put hashtag 12-year-old girl chatter. Okay. Now, after I tweeted that, Robbie, a fan then came back and said that he had alternate lines. Now, you and Robbie McNeil have to sing that in lieu of a haiku or limerick next episode, or both preferably. And then he comes up with these lines: "My Balana don't want none unless you've got face tats, hun." Get it? Face tats?
All right. We can mix it up a little. Well, just so everybody knows, in season three, Garrett and I will be swapping the haiku limerick assignments for season three. We're going to try it. We're going to start
we'll
out.
We'll try it. We'll try it.
We're going to try it. Yeah. I'm excited to hear your limericks, because they're not easy. I'm just going to say, they're not as easy as, you got to be like relaxed. You just got to just breathe, figure out the rhythm and the rhyme, and try to make sense of it. I'm excited to see your limericks, because the haiku can be intentionally obtuse. It can be simple and intentionally kind of abstract, and it still works. It seems deep and, you know, I've been inspired. We may have talked about this a little before, but
yeah, we've
been
did.
Inspired by the haikus and just doing my own little personal haiku adventure. So I'm really enjoying that. I'm excited to get into season three as with the haiku assignments.
Yeah, it's really cool, because you've actually taken this upon yourself to do this in your real life, which is, you know, it makes me feel like, hey, I did something that made Robbie do the same thing in real life, which is really, really neat.
It's added to my life, the haiku. this discovery of the haiku and the beauty of the haiku has added value to my life. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, man. So on that note, maybe we should go watch Basics Part One, the finale of season two.
Let's watch it. I'm excited.
Patreon patrons, stay tuned for What Do We Remember? Back from watching Basics Part One.
How exciting. It was very exciting.
Now I know why Paris left.
I know. I was in that moment. I'm like, oh my God, that's why he's not on the planet. And is he dead? That's the question.
Yeah, that is the question. I won't know
until we watch the next episode whether Paris survived or not. I will have no idea.
Well, you know, I'm going to bet that he's still alive.
I mean, I think I did more episodes, but I can't remember much. So maybe he died. I don't know. We'll have to wait till next week.
They just kept sending a paycheck for seasons 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7, even though you were dead.
That's the kind of job I want, is just because they like me.
Kim had a shrine to Paris for the rest of the seasons. There you go. Well, I just want to begin by first saying that this episode, before we went to Lone Pine, we received a memo. And when I say we, I mean Robert Beltran, Tim Russ, and myself received a memo from the production office.
I remember this, yeah.
Yeah. So I just, for those of you who don't know, I'm going to say this story now. This memo essentially said, Tim, Robert, Garrett, we want you to know that we are concerned that we will be on location and we'll be staying in Lone Pine. And we're just very concerned that the Lone Pine population may be ambivalent towards those who are not Caucasian. So therefore, they recommended that if we went to town to eat or to grab a drink, that we would not go by ourselves, that we needed to be with a group of people to sort of help ensure our safety, which I thought, wow. I mean, at that time it was 1997, I guess, or 90s, mm-hmm. yeah, 90, 96, 97. And I was thinking, are you kidding me? Is this for real? But I did make a joke. I was joking around with Beltran. I said, Tim, Robert, and myself, we should go to the local saloon and just kick open the door and say, welcome, this is your new mayor, the treasurer and of the city, you know, and just sort of like say that, make the announcement that we were going to start running things.
It is kind of crazy though, that the studio and the producers felt like they had to let people know, let you guys know in particular, that this is a rougher town and, you know, may not be safe.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they did send the memo to, I feel like everybody got the memo that this, you know, is a rougher town and just don't go by yourselves anywhere. I feel like everybody got that.
Oh, was it? Okay.
I think it was for everybody, but I think the conversation to you guys, to people who were, you know, ethnically diverse, you know, whatever, brown people, Asian people that weren't Caucasian, that, yeah. On top of it, just not being a very safe place to be, you know, by yourself, that you could encounter some racism and you could encounter some prejudice and you could encounter, I think that that's what I remember now that you bring up that story, is that,
yeah,
because I think everybody was sort of warned, hey, you know, stick together. It's a rough town. Nothing against Lone Pine now. I don't know how it is now, but certainly at that moment in time, it was maybe not a safe place to wander around by yourself. So. I would have protected you though. If I had been there, dude, I had your back. Okay.
Oh yeah. I appreciate that. I know you would have, yeah. But I don't recall it being a message to everybody. I thought it was specifically sent like it was to us, but if you saw it too, that's great.
Yeah. I feel like the crew got the memo and everything, but I do remember them saying, not only is it not a safe place, it's a place where they're not used to a diverse looking group of people, like our cast and our crew. We're a diverse group of people. So I think that's something that's amazing about Star Trek, you know, just to jump on that subject for a second. Since the beginning of Star Trek, since Roddenberry cast the first show, the original series, it has been, you know, a show of inclusivity, of diversity, of, you know, there was no other show on television in 1969. Or 68 or whatever year the original series started. It was 66. There you go. No other show on television that looked like Star Trek.
No.
Not even close.
No.
So it's always been kind of ahead of its time. And I even found in this episode, a lot of the Kazon, I mean, you know, Maj Kala and the Kazon's attitude towards women has always been consistent of, you know, this chauvinistic, misogynistic sort of attitude that the Kazon had, but for some reason it jumped out at me even more, probably because he backhanded the captain. you know, and the way he spoke. And I was like thinking, wow, how ironic that on the show, the Star Trek show with the first female captain, really making a point to put women in leadership positions, that that character was behaving that way. I think it was intentional that they wanted to show sort of a contrast between who Star Trek is and what this particular group of aliens' attitudes towards women was. It's much more primitive, much less enlightened and ignorant attitude.
Yeah. But just to add to what you were saying before, yes, Star Trek is definitely, since its inception in 1966, it has been the most inclusive. But when you say IDIC, that is the Star Trek reference to infinite diversity in infinite combinations, right? So that is something that has been espoused by Roddenberry and people afterwards. So it's always been about inclusiveness. And just to update everybody on what happened when we got to Lone Pine, once we got into town, we went to the local, whatever it was, the restaurants that we ate at or any place with the 7-Eleven, the convenience store. We didn't see anything like that. So no one got called names, you know? So I guess it was just a precautionary move on the part of production, because I just felt it was a really small town mentality and kind of maybe possibly could have issues, you know? But I'm going to say for part two, something that did happen that was a little scary at the very end of filming of Basics part one and part two. I'm going to save that for part two. So,
okay. All right.
Just so you know. Okay.
All right. So we've got to summarize our episode with a haiku and a limerick now. So
here we go.
You want to give me your haiku first?
Yeah. Okay. Here we go. A haiku for Basics part one. Seska sends message. Mission to rescue baby. It's really a trap.
Whoa. Nice.
You like that?
You nailed it. If that's what it is. That's what it is. All right.
I'm so excited to hear yours.
I have to give credit to Rebecca Jane for this limerick. sometimes I get a little stumped and intimidated, and she saved the day. So here we go. Credit to Rebecca for this limerick. Here we go.
Yeah.
Chakotay is baby daddy. Suter is still acting catty. Tom leaves to save the day. Voyager's taken away. Maj Kulla is really quite happy. Thank you. Well, thank Rebecca.
Rebecca, you nailed it.
I'm going to give it one more ride just for fun.
Yeah, let's hear it one more time.
Chakotay is a baby daddy. Suter is still acting catty. Tom leaves to save the day. Voyager's taken away. Maj Kulla is really quite happy. There you go. It's good. It's good, right? It's worth
it. Yeah, it's good.
Double dip.
You saw my tweet to say happy birthday to Rebecca. Right?
I included
the whole master of limericks kind of thing in there. So that was good. I'm very appreciative of Rebecca's brain power.
Me too.
In helping you.
Me too.
All right. So this particular episode, it was written by Michael Piller and directed, by Rick Colby. So.
Yes. And Rick Colby, by the way, I got to say, it was so refreshing to see him on a big episode like this, doing what he does, what he, you know, did best with us, shooting beautiful, dynamic, compelling shots. I mean, you know, when, for example, when the whole crew is being taken hostage and, you know, herded up, his approach to filming that was so effective. It was so, you know, you felt like a member of the crew just being herded together and claustrophobic. And I just think over and over again, Rick did a phenomenal job with the way he shot this episode. It was beautiful. It was a great episode.
I agree. It looks fantastic.
So we start out with Suter, which I had forgotten Brad Dourif was in this episode. Obviously, he's in part two because he's left in a very important place. But that opening shot of him with, you know, working on the plant. And I was just like immediately, you know, drawn in, immediately excited about the episode. Brad's such a great actor, and his character is so good.
So yeah, so Suter genetically engineers the Tuvok orchid,
which is so nice to sort of, and so redeeming for his character to be so grateful and, you know, seems to be, you know, rehabilitating in a lot of great ways and mm-hmm. doing really well. And Tuvok takes a real, you know, paternal, you know, care of him. And I thought mm-hmm. that was wonderful. Yeah, yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. And you're right. I forgot about him too. I'm like, oh my God, he's still on the ship in, yeah. well, confined to quarters, but he's still there.
Yeah. Poor guy. Yeah. I was thinking about that. Like, yeah, later on when we see him in his quarter, or when Neelix comes in and he's just stuck in the quarters, I'm like, God, he's been stuck there all these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh,
I know.
Crazy.
I know. But he had a lot of time to mm-hmm. work on the orchids. And of course, that's the reason why he was doing that, is not because most murderers like to work on flowers, but because of the mind melding with Tuvok. He's mm-hmm. taken on some of Tuvok's interests or hobbies, right?
So yep.
that's why he's doing that.
We go to the bridge and there's a message from Seska, which again, I thought Rick Colby did a great job of shooting this, you know, this message from Seska in such a great authentic way that it felt very compelling, you know, the mm-hmm. the static look of it, the energy of the shot, her performance was very compelling and obviously, you know, leaves Chakotay in a very tough place.
In such a tough place that he goes back to his quarters to utilize the Vision Quest Akuchimoya process.
He does the old Akuchimoya thing. Mm-hmm. Right before that, though, I got to say, in Janeway's quarters, he talks with Janeway. And it was a reminder of two things. Rick Colby, the way he stages scenes with actors moving constantly. You know, he didn't do a lot of big wide shots and then just cut to a close-up. It's like one shot leads to another. The actors are moving. Janeway was up high and then down low. And so I thought the staging and the filming of the scene was great. The other thing that came to mind in that, Janeway and Chakotay close talk a lot. Like Janeway gets right up next to him and is like, Chakotay. Like there's a lot of whisper close talk. It's like, Why do people do that in real life?
Well, they do now after they've been stranded on a planet together due to a bug bite virus. Now they're used to it, right? He's already massaged her back and they've already clasped hands. He's already told her kind of that he loves her. So
yeah, he should have told her he loves her.
He should have.
Instead, he said he knows what true peace is.
True peace is, yeah.
Yeah.
Peace in his native language is love.
It's love, exactly. Okay, so he goes into his dream, Akuchimoya style, mm-hmm. and Dad gives him a lesson on unconditional love, on family.
Yeah, because his issue, what he's struggling with, is unwanted pregnancy. He said that this was forced upon him, you know? Mm-hmm. And then his father uses the analogy, or at least tells him the story of some of their ancestors when the, you know, Caucasians came in and murdered or they came in and raped and pillaged. And basically a lot of the women of the tribe ended up giving birth mm-hmm. to children that were half invaders and half, you know, theirs mm-hmm. basically. And what did they do with those children? They accepted them and loved them like they were their own. And mm-hmm. one of them ended up being a fabulous leader. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we go into the briefing room to talk about what we're going to do as a team. And I loved when you stepped up to the monitor and you were like, excuse me, doctor, and you cut him off. and then later on, we hear his voice going, can I say something now? You turn him back.
You look at the look on the doctor's face when I say, excuse me, doctor. He's like, he gives this one, not as wide-eyed as I just did, but he kind of like, he steps back a bit, which is kind of funny, you know, for him being a program to act like that, but it is what it is. Kim suggests echo displacement so that it looks like ships are coming to our aid as one way to fool the Kazon attack. Mm-hmm. The doctor comes up with another suggestion of creating a holographic illusion of friendly ships, which is really interesting as well.
Mm-hmm.
Did you notice anything about your hair?
My hair was very puffy. In fact, I was going to say, why didn't I get a haircut before this episode?
It was extra long, but it was also curled in a weird way on the sides. Did you notice that?
I definitely noticed my hair had a lot to contribute to this episode. Yeah, there was a lot of hair going on.
I didn't know what was happening.
It was a little
confused.
David Hasselhoff style or something. I don't know.
It was Baywatch. I was like, what's he doing? Do you remember feathered hair back in the would it be 80s?
70s, yes. late 70s,
early 80s. Yes. Like Farrah Fawcett would, that's what your hair looks like. It's got a little mini feather going on.
I know.
And I thought, did you not get a haircut? So they ended up having to feather you?
I feel like it was a little long. And so it got a little poofy. Yeah. I definitely noticed a hair, you know, as we do every episode, there's some hair thing.
Yeah. We talk about happening. Hair.
Hair is a big part of Star Trek. So
it really is. Okay. I'm glad you saw that too.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I really loved in the sick bay. So we beam over this Kazon. We beam him over and he's dying. He's injured and it looks like he's about to die. And the doctor's able to save him. And he tells Chakotay this whole story about Seska and Maj Kala and what had happened. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a really interesting angle that Rick Colby, he filmed Chakotay kind of behind him in a close-up.
Oh, so yeah.
Chakotay was sort of turned away and listening and very suspicious and dramatic. Mm-hmm. And I just thought it was, you know, a very unconventional angle for us. It reminded me that I remember Rick Colby was always very intentional in trying to be edgy. And his style was much more modern than a lot of the directors on our show tended to be. Rick always did interesting things. And I found that to be really interesting, that story. And sort of, it was pushing into Chakotay, but from behind him, kind of off to the side. And it was just very interesting. So
yeah,
I thought that was great.
Yeah, that was a really cool camera move for sure. One thing I noticed, the Kazon that we beam aboard that's almost dead, his name is Tierna. So when he's on the bio bed, did you notice that on that close-up of Tierna, he begins to tell his story, did you notice his teeth?
No.
They actually discolored it. It's like the first time I've seen, because typically when we have alien races on Star Trek, they've got all kinds of, you know, prosthetics on their head, wigs, and, you know, you name it. But their teeth are still very human and very white, you know. But this guy's teeth were completely discolored. They were discolored and they were, they looked more of like what Kazon teeth should look like. And I was shocked. And I kept thinking,
interesting.
Is that, you know, the makeup department having extra time on their hands and they were like, let's just do his teeth too? Or is that really the decaying teeth of the guest actor? Maybe he had bad teeth.
I'm sure they discolored them.
Yeah.
I am wondering something now that you mentioned this. I feel like Neelix had dentures. I mean, I know he did.
Yes, he did.
And I remember he used to always sort of like spit them out. That was his thing. That was his thing. I remember that.
But of course, as a series regular, they're going to have more money to do teeth for an alien.
Yeah, they did dentures that had the Talaxian sort of teeth. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, so now we head to engineering.
Before we go there, I thought this was an interesting moment for me. The doctor talks to Chakotay, and Chakotay just is very suspicious of all of this. And the doctor says, you know, I can't do a lie detector test on him.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Because we need a baseline. And without a baseline, I can't tell you if he's telling the truth or not. Yeah. But the doctor does say, you know, if it makes any difference, he was about to die. Like, you know, he really, that part of his story is true. He was about to really die physically, scientifically. So maybe we should believe him, you know?
Yeah.
And I felt like that was a very important little detail, but you know, if we had been more cautious or suspicious about Seska's story and about this Kazan story, we wouldn't have gotten into our situation, you know? So that was a moment of like, okay, feels like we're verifying that he's telling the truth by this, you know, what the doctor says, which turns out to, you know, he's going to kill himself later in the episode anyway. He's going to, you know, he's a suicide bomber basically. Right. So part of his cover was to actually be near death so that they, you know, could, the whole plan was very clever. So,
yeah. So after the doctor tells him that, Chakotay still doesn't believe it. He heads to engineering and then he wants to get more evidence. And he asks Kim and Torres, you know, what's the status report? And Kim and Torres report that they found nothing unusual with the evidence from the Kazon shuttle. And everything looks like his story is checking out at this point.
Also, Janeway, Tuvok says, oh, can you come down and talk to Suter? And so Janeway goes down to talk to Suter about the, you know, his hybrid, you know, plant. Mm-hmm. And the research he's doing, he wants to do more research and he needs some more tools and some more equipment. And he says, you know, it's nothing that's dangerous. And he really sincerely sort of begs for this. And she says, well, let me think about it. She doesn't agree. And he loses his temper.
Yeah.
You see that, oh, he's still got the crazy side. He's still creepy. He's still got the potential for, you know, serial killer in him. So I thought that was a really, really interesting. And I just felt so bad for him. Later on, Neelix brings in some soup and he's just sitting in the dark. You know, Brad Dourif was so good, so perfect for this role. It's also, we keep getting attacked, you know, by the Kazon. We choose this path that looks like everything, you know, adds up.
Right.
You know, Neelix says, yeah, he's telling the truth. That's a smart path. Neelix tries to trick him, but it is the truth. And then he pulls up some code that shows the trap, the net of, you know,
the Nystrom defense net.
The Nystrom defense net, exactly. And it does show. So, you know, a couple other things sort of add up and there's nothing absolutely certain that this is a smart move for us to continue on this, you know, this rescue mission for Chakotay's child, but things continue to sort of add up. And then we start getting attacked by these little Kazon ships and they keep hitting the same spot. And that definitely is very suspicious. And I wanted to know, what is a starboard ventral? What is, they keep saying, they keep hitting our starboard ventral.
Yeah.
What is a star? I mean, I fly the ship. I should know this. What is a ventral? It's a vent of some sort.
Yeah. Or maybe that's sort of the ship's, you know, crotch area, like, you know, the really.
Yeah, maybe the ventral.
The really, really sensitive part of the ship.
Yeah.
Is what it is. The starboard ventral.
It's very sensitive because they keep hitting it, which ends up, you know, preventing Janeway ultimately from doing the self-destruct sequence, because that's what they've been doing. But they don't get it yet, that's they're kind of setting them up to steal their ship. Definitely,
maybe we can use that terminology, Robbie. Is that possible? Ventral? Yeah, just like in public, like if someone's harassing you, you're like, back up, man, don't make me kick you in your starboard ventral, like that.
Interesting.
You could do that.
Yeah.
And then confuse that
attack. Or, you know what, oh, I really gotta go, is there a starboard ventral anywhere? Something like that.
Yeah, I like that one better. Okay. See, yours is more passive. Mine was an aggressive.
Yeah, mine's like, I gotta go to the bathroom. I like it. Where's the?
I gotta release my starboard ventral.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Cut the starboard ventral?
Oh, Robbie.
Yeah.
You're the one that wants to go to the starboard ventral. Exactly.
By the way, Neelix does deliver some soup to Suter.
What kind of soup, Robbie?
Leola root soup. That's his specialty. Leola root soup. Leola root stew, Leola root pasta. He loves the Leola root.
Yes, he does.
Clearly, the rest of the crew hated it because no one ever said a good thing about his food. So
no, they don't.
It had to have been okay, though, for us to keep letting him cook.
Yeah.
And so we're heading through, and then all of a sudden these warships show up.
Mm-hmm.
And actually,
because we're reversing course. Yeah, we reverse course. That's when they chase us. Yeah.
Yep. We reverse course. She's like, let's get out of here, turn around.
Yep.
There's those ships, I think 8 of them. Something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah. Kim uses echo displacement to show Talaxian ships coming to our aid. Yep. And then we utilize the doctor's suggestion of the holographic projections of these Talaxian ships, and of course that humorous moment where the one of the third ship that's supposed to come in to help us out ends up being the doctor being beamed out into space. Which
was very, very funny. Well, especially coming on the heels of, like, she gets annoyed with him because he keeps asking all these he's like panicking, getting really neurotic, asking a lot too many questions. Yeah. She's like, shut up, would you just and then by the way, I think B'Elanna and the Doctor are a very funny combo. I would have liked to have seen more of B'Elanna.
More of that,
They were, they're very, what an odd couple they are. And I thought that little scene was very funny.
I agree.
Then he gets beamed out into space. And the battle, the battle's begun, And then that scene with the Kazon sort of saying prayers. He like, he put a hand to one side and the other. And I was like, what the heck's going on there?
And then he just peels his toenail off.
Oh my god, he peels the toenail off and then pulls, like, magically pulls a needle or something out of the toenail, which I don't know where he hid that in the toenail. And he's a living bomb. Like, whatever he shoots into his bloodstream blows him up. It's, that's not science. I don't think you can shoot anything into your blood and blow up.
Yeah, but you do remember earlier when he was getting a checkup by the doctor.
Yeah.
The doctor was like, well, everything seems to look, you know, everything seems to check out fine, except for the fact that I have elevated levels of, and he listed some chemical, which sounded like some type of gasoline derivative. And I think that's what, whatever he injected into his bloodstream, that was what caused the reaction, the explosive reaction with the stuff that was already in his system.
So you put some toenail juice into your into your elevated levels of gasoline and you're gonna blow up. So all of you guys out there, don't mix your toenail juice with your gasoline.
I kind of wish that he took it from someplace else on his body, because I don't want to see a toenail being ripped off, and I also don't want to be reminded that so many species in the Star Trek world are bipedal species, where they're like, both, you know what I'm saying, like
he has the same number of toes as us,
and he's got toenails too. He's just a rust color, that's the only thing different, you know. And it's maybe if you pulled it out of look, there's so much stuff going on up here in the hair area, right? Like, there's literally you could hide that little needle anywhere in his hair. He just should have pulled it out of there. He didn't need to pull his whole toenail
off. I'm with you.
Yeah.
But he pulls it off, he blows up, and now things are falling apart. And that's when Tom Paris says, Captain, let me save you guys. I'm going to take a shuttle all by my big boy self. I'm going to fly back to those Talaxians and get a little help. And he's off and he goes. And and then they start shooting at his shuttle.
You took the sporty shuttle, by the way. It was the sleek one.
It was the sporty shuttle, sporty spice. I took Sporty Spice, but it wasn't fast enough. It appears that I got blown up, and there was some debris, because later on they say, you know, let's check the debris trail, make sure there's no warp signature.
Yeah.
Might be trying to trick us. So they did sort of tip the hand.
But that was Seska saying that, remember?
It was Seska,
And it was such a, couple dynamic where she kept reminding him, and make sure you, are you sure he's dead? Yeah. And he's like, fine. And make sure you check this. He's like, he's rolling his eyes the whole time. And it was just, it's the classic, you know, arguing couple kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But you evidently are dead, but we know better. You're still alive somehow.
Somehow, right? I have a feeling I'll be alive when it's all said and done. Yeah. Janeway says, let's evacuate this thing, but she can't just self-destruct the ship because they kept hitting the starboard ventral, which now it makes sense. Seska and all those guys appear and she's like, you know, yeah. hold your fire.
Yeah.
And they sort of give up. And then Seska lied to Maj Kala and said Chakotay had basically raped her.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And you can see Seska's kind of sheepish look to Chakotay because he's pissed off. He's like, that's not what happened, Chakotay says. But
correct. Because you're gone now. Physically.
Emotionally.
Also emotionally, you are gone. You're not even there.
Nope.
So this is the point where when the first Kazon come on the bridge, I refer to this story in our interview with the stunt coordinator that we had in our special interview.
Dennis stuff Danger Madelone.
Yes. Dennis Madelone, who we interviewed for our Patreon patrons. He and I, we related this issue, this story of the first Kazon not really holding his plasma or his phaser rifle very aggressively. So this was the scene. Yes, oh, where funny. We had, oh my gosh. I mean, it was comical. I mean, the way the guy came in and he was just literally like pew pew. I mean, it was just the worst. I mean, it and then Dennis getting frustrated with each successive take where there was no change. Like he kept directing him, no, you hold the weapon like you mean it, you know, like you're really going to be, you're taking these people out. You know, this is not some picnic or walk in the park. I don't know what you're doing. And the guy kept doing the same thing. And it was so, oh my God, he couldn't take it. And then this scene is also, once they force us down onto our knees.
Yeah.
This was the scene where one background Kazon guy was overzealous with Tim Russ and he kept shoving him in the back and Tim kept getting pushed forward and then he lost it. Tim just went, he looks up at the guy and says, just once, like that. He said to the guy, you know, you don't keep shoving me 15 times, you know.
Oh, how funny.
Just once. And the guy was like, oh, okay. This was also the scene, Robbie, when we were filming.
Boy, you guys had a lot of excitement. Oh,
this scene is filled with, yeah, there's three stories that come from this. The Kazon extra that ran in that didn't know how to hold, that was really more passive than aggressive. Mm-hmm. Then the Kazon extra that was overly aggressive, shoving Tim Russ that he actually got pissed off. And then during this, when we were filming this entire bridge sequence, it was raining cats and dogs. And Los Angeles, it's sunny for the most part, rains every now and then, but once in a blue moon each year, I would say there's like 2 weeks of nonstop cats and dog raining. And this was the time that this was going on.
Wow.
Okay. And so when it rains a lot, guess what? For us, they end up putting these pallets, these wooden pallets down in between the trailers. So we can.
Oh, that's right.
You remember that?
That's right.
So we wouldn't walk into these puddles of water, deep puddles that would kind of well up because of the rain. So we would get on these, we walk on these pallets. And I was actually being, you know, they said, okay, we've got the shot. We're moving on to the next sequence. We're moving on to the next scene, still on the bridge. So we were sent back to the trailers. And I remember I kind of like took one step onto the pallet and the shoes that I had were not mine. They were the hand-me-downs that Brent Spiner wore on Next Generation. I talked about that before. And I slipped. I slipped on the pallet and I kind of fell forward landed on my knees really hard. Like I was like,
oh, I remember this.
I was in such pain. I was hurting. So then when they put us down on our knees, you know, the Kazon then kind of lift us up or tell us to get up to take us to the cargo bay. I was getting up very slowly because my knee was hurting so much. My raising myself up was a very gingerly kind of move. I was like, okay, I'm going to get up. And Tim made fun of me because he didn't know what happened to me. He was like, okay, old man. He said something like that, where he was, you know, making fun of my very slow movements to get up. Right. And then, so like I said, Tim got pissed off. Dennis Madelone got pissed off and pissed off.
I should have been there. Cause I could have smoothed all this out. I could have made everybody feel good.
You know why, Robbie? Because you're the actor whisperer. You've always been the actor whisperer. You've been able, as a director, you do it. And as an actor, you did it for us too. And you weren't there.
I wasn't there and everything fell apart.
Oh my God. I got so angry at Tim.
Yeah.
And that was the day that the decision was made. I said, this is because you guys don't have enough funding to buy me a pair of shoes that have a tread.
Shoes would get, they would put these kind of rubber soles on early in the series, and they would get worn out over time, like any pair of shoes.
Yeah.
And they would become just slippery, flat rubber. Yeah. So I can imagine if there's anything, there weren't any treads. There was no traction or, you know, and they'd just get worn out and people wouldn't look at them and notice it. And so, in a situation, whether it's raining or whether we're in a scene where there's debris or things like that, you know, jungle set or something, they were not very sturdy shoes.
No. Okay. All right. So back to the
episode. They take over, they herd everybody together. Mm-hmm. I thought it was very interesting. Seska starts breastfeeding on the bridge. It just, they take over. Maj Kula sits down in the captain's seat. Yeah. We see the doctor is hiding. He almost gets caught. Suter has escaped, but we know he's, you know, somewhere. Eventually we find him up in the vent system.
Yeah.
The shots of the herding the crew together, I thought were great. Rick Colby did a great job.
Yeah.
The extras all really did a great job, our background players. And Maj Kula lands the ship on the planet. Now, I think I had already landed the ship once myself. So at least I was still the first one to land the ship. But he seemed to just, he walked on the ship, didn't even know it very well, and landed. Yeah. So it sort of takes away from what Paris did to be a big deal. It's like, oh, well, some stranger can walk on and land the ship. It must not be that hard. So,
okay. I'm just going to say
too easy.
Now, I think Seska somehow got the manual, you know, she, maybe Jonas, sent the manual. She must have used
Tom Paris's plan.
Notes.
Yes. That's sure what they did.
So it doesn't lessen your landing. Your landing was still very impressive.
Thank you.
But it did seem a little easy that these backwards Kazons are able to land so easily. Okay, so we're on the planet. It's the Hanan or the Hanan system is what they said. Mm-hmm. This is where we're at. It's an M-class planet that Chakotay surmises is in the Pliocene state of evolution. So it's
that's why we see a dinosaur. Early. That's why we see a caveman.
That little worm creature dinosaur, which I do remember that is the reason why one of our recurring actors ends up getting eaten by that creature in the next episode. So,
oh, really? don't spoil it for me.
I won't spoil it.
There's a caveman, there's a dinosaur. I also like that, you know, alpha team with me, beta team with me. Harry goes, gamma team.
Yeah.
And then Neelix goes, delta team.
Like, Neelix goes, everybody who's going to look for Leola roots with me.
Delta team with Neelix. Yeah. How did he get like a leadership role here? And like, you know, like, yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is we were filming this. What I remember is when Janeway says the line before we break up into team, she goes, and then we'll reconvene in 2 hours is what she says. And then at that point, I don't know if it was me or Beltran, somebody goes, how are we supposed to know what 2 hours is? We have nothing. We don't have our tricorders. We don't have anything on us, right?
That's
and then
true.
Beltran started doing the Native American thing. He's like, when the sun reaches, would cast a shadow on the rock over there, like that. And he started doing this whole
That's
bit.
Very
right?
true.
And
no technology.
We had no technology.
That's funny.
So we continued. Robert Beltran continued with that joke for many, many years. But it would evolve. It would be like, instead of when the sun casts a shadow on that rock, he would say, when the sun casts a shadow on that rabbit. Like he would like make various, you know, changes to that version of
Robert always had hilarity. A way of like finding something. It would be very funny. And then he would run with it for like 2 years.
Yeah. We all did.
Yeah, we all did. But he had some runners for a while. Robert
he did.
No, he is they would change over time, but
and then we
know that Suter is still on the ship. We do see him up in that vent system kind of hanging out. And we see the doctor all alone feeling, you know, poor doctor. Everybody's gone. Rebecca said, you know, well, at least Suter has a lot of people to murder now. So he's going to be busy.
Well, she's right about that. That's not to be a spoiler, but that's kind of what ends up, being a secret weapon.
What? Yeah.
So I know. Isn't it great? That's, it's kind of
very exciting. I can't wait to see season 3's premiere. And did you have a theme for this episode? This was a tough one for me.
Let me hear yours.
My theme was that you should always verify before you trust someone who's proven to be themselves to be a liar, because we sort of didn't verify. We kept going, maybe, like, I think Chakotay's instincts to be cautious and suspicious were right. And he sort of got pulled along with, you know, the dream with his dad and the doctor kind of saying, well, you know, I can't guarantee, but he was going to die. So, like, all these little things, but he never really verified that this Kazan was telling the truth, that Seska was telling the truth, that any of it. They ended up getting in trouble because they didn't absolutely verify known liars. That would be my theme is, you know, when someone has proven themselves more than once to be a liar, verify first before you trust.
That's your lesson to take from this.
That's
and
my
you know
lesson.
What you know what that reminds me of? Wasn't there a story of the frog and the scorpion? Wasn't that the one where the scorpion says to the frog, you know, I need to get across this river.
Something like that.
Is it a frog or am I getting the animals?
I thought it was a snake and something else.
Yeah. But the bottom line was
snake needed a ride or something like that.
The scorpion is the one that needs the ride. And the other animal, let's say it's the frog. The frog says, I can't trust you because you're going to bite me. And then the scorpion goes, no, I just need your help across the river. And then he keeps pleading. And then finally the frog agrees. The frog takes him all the way across, and once they get across, the scorpion bites him. And the frog is like, why did you do that? You know, I told you, you know, you said you wouldn't. And the scorpion said, well, that's my nature, you know. So it's almost like that's kind of what you've hit upon in your lesson is
that's a similar theme to me is when someone has proven, you know, shown their stripes to you more than once, assume that they're a scorpion,
right?
You know,
I'll go with that. I like that too.
All right.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right. Well, next week we're going to be back with season 3's premiere and your first limerick. So I'm excited.
Basics part 2 and part 2 of my Lone Pine story. We'll have that, which is great. That involves Kes, Tuvok, and myself. We are the three players in this story. It's a
Okay. Coming up in our bonus material, we've got Martha Hackett joining us to talk about Basics part 1.
Stay tuned for your bonus material, Patreon patrons. But everybody else, thank you. And we'll see you next week.
See you next week. Basics part 2. Can't wait.